Kane is in the building.
Salford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Happy Friday, everyone. Wasn't so much a happy Thursday yesterday for Canucks Nation based on what I saw on Twitter and based on what I'm seeing in our poll question today. What is your level of faith in Canucks management, high, medium, or low? Over 800 votes on this one. 85% say low. Yikes. That is... I sometimes wonder what ownership thinks when they see stuff like that. But
not great, Bob.
It isn't great, is it? So I was doing some thinking last night, and I was trying to wrap my head. Like, you can't just come on the show and just keep, you know, whining and complaining and going, ah, it's a bad contract, bad contract, bad contract, right? And I think, for me at least, and for a lot of the fans that I read, if you're able to kind of pare it down a little bit and focus it, it's simply that there aren't enough value contracts on the Canucks that aren't entry-level contracts or aren't naturally artificially brought down because they're RFAs, because the club has control, because of the CBA. There are no really good value veteran contracts on the Canucks. Tyler Motte would be one that is a good value contract, for sure. But how many others are you like, wow, that is an unbelievable deal? Like, remember when Burrow signed his 8-year or 4-year deal for $8 million. So it was, I think it was a $2 million cap hit. What a great deal that was. The Sedin's line mate, who was scoring, what was his top year? Did he hit 40? He scored a lot of goals. He was making $2 million. That's a great value contract. And I realize that you can't build your team like a stock portfolio. But there is a reason they call it asset management, right? And there are some similarities to building a portfolio of good companies or bad companies. There's comparisons to be made. And of course, the king of value investing would be a guy like Warren Buffett. And he's there for a good quote. He does two things well: makes money and gives a good quote. And I think a lot of his quotes, when you read them, you're like, wow, that's a good quote. But you also think, wow, that's kind of obvious, isn't it? But I want to read a few quotes of Warren Buffett's and see if you can relate these to the Canucks. Okay, the first one. This is maybe his most famous quote. Price is what you pay. Value is what you get. And that is essentially saying that you can have a $10 million contract that's great value, or you can have a $2 million contract that's terrible value. Again, it's obvious, but this is the issue with a lot of the contracts on the Canucks. You don't hate the player. You hate the value, you hate the contract that they're signed for. And you can say, well, this guy's only overpaid by $1 or $2 million. It's not a big deal. But if you add 5, 6, 7 of those contracts and you add them up, you're approaching $10 million. And that right there is a $10 million player. Think of what you could do when you add up all of the overpays on the Canucks. And this is another Buffett quote that I think perfectly fits the Tanner Pearson contract. What is smart at one price is stupid at another. So Tanner Pearson, I remember yesterday or the day before, I was sitting there going, I don't think it's that big a mistake to be talking to Tanner Pearson about a contract extension. I thought, he's a good player. He is still a useful player, even as he gets older. Even though he struggled this season and didn't produce much offensively, he is a useful player. And maybe he wants to stay in Vancouver so much that he'd take a hometown discount. So I thought, what if you throw him an offer of $4 million over 2 years? And you say, you know, that's the most we can do. And if you want to sign it, sign it. If not, we're going to trade you. Because you know who the Canucks did that to? And Thomas Drantz reminded me of this yesterday on our phone call. Burrows. They did it at the trade deadline. They said, all right, here's a contract. It gives you security. You know, you got to remember, you're Alex Burrows, and you've come from the ECHL, and you're now have the potential to sign an $8 million contract, or we're going to trade you. And Burrows signed the contract. Could have done a similar thing with Tanner Pearson and said, listen, I know that taking a pay cut, you don't want to do that, but you can either stay in Vancouver or you can test the market. And the market, you might not like that market right now. It's not too fun to be a UFA right now in a flat salary cap. Here's another quote. And I'm sorry if this gets a little, I don't even, is it Sicarisy a little bit to be having quotes?
Well, definitely from Warren Buffett.
He's a pretty rich guy, you know.
Yeah, but he's highbrow.
He's not highbrow at all. He's like the opposite of highbrow. He goes to McDonald's every morning. That's what he has for breakfast.
Yeah, but when you make that much money, it's highbrow. You can't
so
judge.
Should I, so should
you can't
I get
judge
from...
every highbrow scenario by whether or not they go to Mickey D's, you know?
Okay.
Like, I'm sure Sicarisy goes to McDonald's every once in a while. Doesn't
well,
mean he's not highbrow.
Okay. Well, I'm going to keep going.
You go ahead.
Okay. I haven't even looked at the text inbox. It might be negative. It might be positive. I have no idea. This is the one that really appeals to me. And it's probably the thing. It sums up my frustration with the Benning era from start to finish. And the quote is, someone's sitting in the shade today because someone planted a tree a long time ago. This is my problem with the Canucks and how they've gone about their business since Benning took over. It never really seems like they've been having a 4 or 5 year outlook. It's always about next season. And I think this extends from ownership, because ownership has essentially said to management, we want you to do two things, build for the future and also build for next year, because we want you to make the playoffs. That's a pretty tough position to be in as a general manager, because those two things compete with each other, right? You can either use your assets now or you can use them for the future. And I remember having a conversation with Jim Benning a few years ago now, and I asked him, what's your biggest fear with trading Chris Tanev? This is when the Canucks were terrible, right? And Chris Tanev, you know, we had formed the Trade Tanev Club. And just because we saw him as a guy that probably isn't going to be in his prime when the Canucks get good. So why not monetize that asset now for something in the future, get a draft pick, and then take the time to develop that draft pick. And then by the time that draft pick is developed, you've hopefully got a pretty good NHL player. And he said, well, if we were to trade Chris Tanev, we'd need to get a good defenseman back because we want to have a competitive team next season. And I said to him, yeah, but should you even be thinking about next season? Should that be your number one priority? And then we got into the whole thing about we're going to have a bunch of kids in the lineup and we want good players around them to show them the way, right? And there is a certain truth to that. And it depends what your philosophy is on building a team. There can be significant risk in tearing down a team and leaving it all to the kids. There can be. But I also think there's a risk in trying to do this two-pronged approach where you're trying to make the playoffs next season when you have very little chance. So in order to do that, you're signing a bunch of veterans to contracts that are going to go bad, that are going to hurt you in 3 or 4 years. And that's exactly what happened to the Canucks. Exactly. What happened to the Canucks is exactly what people warned them about. And then so yesterday when they signed Tanner Pearson, people were like, you keep doing it. And then one more quote. Are you gonna let me read one more quote, Dom?
Yeah, you've got 90 seconds before we have to hit the break.
Okay. The most important thing to do if you find yourself in a hole is to stop digging. And I feel like the Canucks did that with all their free agent signings. Because in the NHL, spending money with a hard salary cap with players you cannot cut, like you can in the NFL, and there is a hard salary cap, unlike baseball or the NBA, you can spend yourself into trouble. You can get yourself into worse trouble by trying to be better. And that's what happened. The Canucks spent themselves into trouble. And while it's great to have an owner that wants to spend to the salary cap, sometimes you end up hurting yourself. And if you look at the Canucks salary cap situation, the problem areas, self-inflicted. It was all self-inflicted. And that is the most frustrating part for the fans. Thomas Drantz is coming up next. Just a reminder, Halford and Brough in the Morning is brought to you by Able Auctions. Business assets to sell? Email sales@ableauctions.ca. I am terrified to open the inbox right now. The Dunbar Lumber text line. If you've got any texts, 650-650. Thomas Drantz joins us next. Halford and Brough Show, Sportsnet 650.
Nibbling on sponge cake, watching the sun bake.
This is my favorite Warren Buffett song. Halford and Brough in the Morning is brought to you by Able Auctions. If you're closing your business and you're not sure what all your assets are worth, that's where value comes in. Let Able Auctions help. They've been helping BC business owners wind down and sell their business assets in an orderly manner for over 30 years. Whether a complete manufacturing plant, a restaurant, or a mechanical shop, Able Auctions has seen it and done it all. Email sales@ableauctions.ca and get your free of charge confidential consultation scheduled today. That's sales@ableauctions.ca. It's Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Welcome to the line now. Welcome to the show. Thomas Drantz of The Athletic. Drantzer, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Did you guys give me the Florida man lead-in with Mark Rizzo?
Actually, yeah.
Incredible.
That's incredible.
I love it.
Well, actually, we did it because I was getting a bit sicarousy with some Warren Buffett quotes about value.
Love it.
The keys to finding value, because I'm looking through the Canucks cap friendly page and I'm going, well, Tyler Mott, that's a good value contract for a non-ELC player.
Is it? I mean, it could be if Mott had like a playmaking third line center and became a consistent 15 goal guy.
Okay, there's a very low bar here, Tom. Let's put it this way. You could trade Tyler Mott for something without having to retain salary.
No question. Mott would have value.
Yep. That can't be said for a lot of the veterans that Jim Benning has signed. And that includes one of my tests is like, if you were to put Tanner Pearson on the market right now, or even this offseason, what could you get back for him?
Yeah, well, could he clear waivers today, having signed that extension?
Right, that's another one.
And I think there's a fair bit of evidence that he could in this flat cap world, right? Mm-hmm. you know, the fact that Richard Ponick, right, pretty comparable piece. I mean, Pearson's better than Ponick. He's certainly more highly regarded. But, you know, Brett Connolly would sort of be the other guy, right? Brett Connolly mm-hmm. just got dealt enormously comparable piece, right? Like another sort of middle six guy who's, I mean, Pearson's a much better defensive player than Brett Connolly, but Brett Connolly's a better goal scorer.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of their overall impact, very comparable. In terms of their contracts, relatively comparable. You know, I'd say that Pearson essentially signed the Connolly deal adjusted for pandemic economics, right? A year shorter and $250K less. And to get off of Connolly, the Florida Panthers just included like a former first round pick, a recent former first round pick at odds with the club and Henrik Borgstrom. You know, Borgstrom's an interesting case in that he's completely fallen off, but like he had a 20-point season in 50 games as a 22-year-old and was one of the best players in college hockey just 2 years ago. Like, this guy still has some reclamation project sheen on him. They had to include that sweetener just to get off the money. And, well, and not to mention Riley Stillman, who's an NHL defenseman now on an ELC, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, two decent young players, like they're dice rolls for the Chicago Blackhawks, but they're, you know, interesting sort of bets for a rebuilding team like Chicago. And yeah, so no, I mean, yes, the answer is yes, ultimately. And I don't want to be too obtuse despite being here to play my role as a fast talking guy for you to get snippy at. the fact remains that, you know, I do think with this Tanner Pearson deal that the Canucks have signed, they have signed very likely a player that 4 months from now would have a much, much lower valuation had he hit the open market, mm-hmm. considering what we expect from sort of a second consecutive favorable buyer's market in the midst of this pandemic.
So, Drance, I did it earlier because I read a bit of your article. Everyone owes you some subscription money for that. If you don't have a subscription, just yeah. send it in and I'll disperse it to Drance. But for those that missed that part, tell us the Canucks' perspective on this. And is Jim Benning doing a presser this morning?
Jim Benning will speak at 10 a.m. About the, but he's going to speak about the outbreak with Dr. Jim Brovard
okay.
at 10 a.m. And then at 10:20 a.m., he's going to discuss hockey matters, specifically the Demko and Pearson extensions.
Okay, so before he does that, though, and you've been speaking with people at the Canucks and maybe Jim himself, what is the Canucks' perspective on this Pearson signing? Why did they feel the need to do this deal now? Why did they feel the need to give Tanner Pearson 3 years and almost $10 million in total?
Yeah, so, you know, the Canucks love Tanner Pearson, first of all. In fact, they'd love to have more Tanner Pearsons, right? Like, if they could find two more guys like Tanner Pearson, I think they'd address one of their biggest issues, right? Which is just sort of depth up front, middle six forward depth, bottom six forward depth. They see Tanner Pearson as a guy who can do both. You know, they see him at 28 as being still in that age group. Now, granted, they've bought his age 29, 30, and 31 seasons, but they sort of see players between the ages of 25 and 32 as being the types of guys you win with, right? And they sort of do, I think anyway, see their team, especially with how they performed this past season and early on this past season, you know, as one that needs veteran support, right? Like, there was a point in the season where Travis Green specifically used the word immature to describe his team, right? I think that reflects a genuine assessment from Jim on down. I don't think the coach and the general manager are not singing off the same hymn book on that matter, to put it that way, right? Like, I think they think this team needs those types of pieces.
Mm-hmm.
I also think there's genuine concern about how the club reacted following the departures of highly respected players in Toffoli, Markstrom, and Tanev in free agency. I think there's a belief that that did play a role in the club's slow start. And, you know, I think with While Pearson, I don't think is seen as necessarily the Pearson didn't have the same amount of gravitas, I guess, in the room as a Markstrom or a Tanev. Like he still was, you know, he's still extremely well liked. He's won a cup. He's been there. He's done that. He's got a level of, you know, like zero maintenance professionalism, right? This is a guy who always is going to lead his group in a bag skate or the 40 skate at the start of training camp.
Mm-hmm.
And they valued all of that. Now, in terms of market forces, I think they overvalued it. But, you know, you can understand why going into next season, the Canucks are going to want to make the playoffs, right? They're not going to want – Jim Benning might have said the club was 2 years away, but he means 2 years away from, you know, in his view, meaningfully contending, right?
Okay.
In terms of next season, they still want to make the playoffs. I think they're going to be pretty optimistic that they can even have fans in the building by the time they get there. And we know, baked into this club's DNA, they compete every year to make the playoffs. And so, you know, I think that's part of it too. You could go bargain hunting on the open market, but Pearson's a bet with a higher floor in their assessment, even at his age. And so, you know, those are the reasons why they really prioritized getting this deal done, why an extension was always something the club was keen on doing, well above and beyond any sort of trade options, exploring monetizing Pearson for some assets and sort of taking some swings in free agency, going out there and looking for your Corey Perry or your Carter Verhaeghe.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, to find Corey Perry, the Montreal Canadiens also whiffed on Michael Frolik, right? To find Carter Verhaeghe, the Florida Panthers also whiffed on Ryan Lomberg and Vinny Hinostroza. Like, that's sort of how that works. You take a volume of smaller bets and you hope you hit, you know, you hope you go yard with one of them, with one of the swings. The Canucks sort of saw Tanner Pearson as a, you know, comfortable single in hand. It's just that it's a really expensive single.
Yeah.
And the problem with, you know, a Frolik whiff, right? Like, that's $750K. It's never going to show up on your balance sheet, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Pearson's already trending toward being a bottom six caliber forward, right? Like, I mean, he maybe has another season as a middle six guy, but thereafter he's going to be a bottom six guy. Like, for his age, 30 and 31 season, you're expecting third or fourth line contributions from a player who's now got a $3.25 million cap hit 4 months ahead of a buyer's market. Like, that's just not an efficient way of maneuvering. And one other thing to come to is, like, at some point this club has to be efficient somewhere, right? And when you look at middle six forwards, like, that's sort of where you tend to be able to find value. Like, it's really hard to find a third line center on the scrap heap who you sign and become something other than what they are. Like, people kind of know what centers are in the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
Defense, same thing. It's very rare that a team goes out and takes a flyer on a $1 million defenseman or, you know, claims a guy off waivers, and it turns out that player is like a capable matchup guy, right? Like, that, it's so rare that that happens.
Yeah.
Defensemen are really expensive. You know, even if they're not that good, they're really expensive mm-hmm. to acquire in trades or in free agency. Middle six forwards, like middle six wingers, they tend to fall through the cracks. Like, there tends to be Verhaeghe's. Like, there tends to be guys that you can kind of find more affordably.
Well, a lot of them end up being products of their centers.
Totally.
Right? Like, who they play with. You're like, wow, this guy isn't very good. Actually, he's pretty good. He just has a terrible center that he plays
right.
with.
Right. Like, he's completely complimentary yeah. for Sasha Barkov. Oh, boy.
Well, exactly,
yeah,
right?
No, it's yeah. dead on.
You mean Connor Sherry isn't as good without Sid?
Right.
Weird.
Well, you know, and you think about a guy like, I think about a guy like, remember Mike Santarelli that the Canucks signed that one the torts season?
Yeah.
And it was like, oh,
he was like their best player, wasn't he?
He was their best player, right. And he ended up being, it was like, this guy has great chemistry with Kessler. In fact, he has such good chemistry with Kessler. Let's move Kessler to the wing. We'll play him at center. You know?
So yeah.
Like, okay. But you know, that's like, middle six wing is a place you can find value. The Canucks have decided to really prioritize that spot and that individual in Tanner Pearson.
Mm-hmm.
And as such, like, they are going to need to find a place to be efficient elsewhere on the roster. And it's probably going to come, you know, well, it's going to come everywhere else. Like, it's going to have to come everywhere else because where they're at now, you know, Pettersson and Hughes are going to take up the majority of their remaining cap space, and this club has significant needs, particularly on the back end, right, and, you know, in the bottom six. Same as it ever was.
Okay, so let's say that the Canucks get Pettersson and Hughes signed to bridge deals for, I don't know, ballpark advance, a cap hit, like $15 million combined, $16 million combined. Okay, let's do that. How much would they have left, and how much would they still need to do?
Yeah, so it's going to depend a little bit on who ends up on LTI and who doesn't, right?
Okay.
But I'm assuming that Michael Ferland will be on LTI going forward. I don't think there's like exact clarity on that, but I think it's a safe assumption. Jay Beagle, some lack of clarity there. We know that he has, like, what I know about the Beagle situation for now is that he has a serious injury, that there's not enough clarity on the matter that it had any impact, like that they were counting on that space being LTI'd and that had any impact on Pearson negotiations heating up over the past 72 hours, right? So, you know, we'll see. So if Beagle is on the roster, right? If Beagle is not on LTI to begin the season, mm-hmm. but Louis Erickson is buried, right? You're looking at about $20 million in cap space once you factor in the $1 million bonus overage penalty that the club will carry from Hughes and Pettersson hitting some factor of their bonuses. Hughes has already hit three of his four. Pettersson's going to at least hit time on ice. So, you know, currently they're on pace to hit four of their eight combined schedule A's. And so $1 million penalty. So that's about $20 million. Now, if Beagle ends up on LTI, that's about $23 million. But you'll obviously have to be very careful about managing it. Like, LTI money is not as good as clean cap space, right? Because it is difficult to manage, and it limits your ability in season to toll money and, you know, leaves you vulnerable to take on these bonus overages as opposed to tolling daily space and just sort of filling it all in that way. So 20 million for now is what you'd probably safely project. If Hughes and Pettersson take up 15 million of that, at least 5 million, and the roster we're looking at has, you know, Jay Beagle's your third line center at the moment, and you have three defensemen signed in Hughes, Schmidt, and Myers, right? It's not even close to good enough, and really shines a spotlight on all the stuff that the club will need to do just to fill out their roster, but especially fill out their roster if they're hoping to be a playoff team. And that's going to have to include considering buyouts for, you know, Vertanen, Roussel, and Erickson if you can't move any of them, trying really hard to trade one of the three of them, maybe Braden Holtby too.
Which might be another reason why they signed Tanner Pearson, because they're like, these guys aren't going to be available because they won't be on the team.
Totally, right. And, I mean, but that's not going to be easy to do, right? Like, it's not easy in a flat cap era to get off of Erickson at six,
no,
or Roussel at three, or Vertanen at 2.5. But in Vertanen's case, 3.7 in salary, right? Like, that's the fly in the ointment. Holtby has $5.7 million in salary because they backloaded his deal. Like, he's not getting claimed by Seattle at that salary level and at the level of performance that he's put in the last 2 years unless you attach him, like, a really nice asset. And then you're sort of impinging on your ability to field your absolute best team in 2023-24 or whatever, when Pettersson and Hughes are 25. So, you know, it's a really delicate situation, and it's going to be extraordinary. Like, it's going to require a level of ruthlessness to navigate that just hasn't typified what we've seen from Canucks hockey operations in the betting era.
Is it ruthlessness or creativity?
Both. Yeah. You know, and I mean, you think about the Canucks in these Pearson talks, right? And obviously, when you want a player that, like, when you really value a player and you want to keep him, and, you know, you're viewing it as vital, then you're not going to sort of play it like this. But, you know, for me, if you go, you know, for me, it's about open communication sometimes. And I just think that, like, 6 weeks ago, they should have gone, to Pearson and been like, you know, the market is bad for players of your ilk, but we love you. Like, you're our favorite guy. Mm-hmm. And we would love to re-sign you. So, you know, not only do we want to re-sign you, but we'll re-sign you to a bit of a premium because we really like who you are. So, you know, here's a $2.5 million offer. I'm trying to think that on this market, you're a $2 million player. And we're sorry to say that. It's not about you. It's just the flat cap we're in this pandemic. But here's a two-year, $2.5 million offer. We're sorry. Like, we understand. Take a week to think about it. If you decide it's not for you, we'll trade you somewhere you want to go chase a cup, like somewhere that's acceptable to you. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk again on when the market opens on the 28th, because we still want you back, but, you know, we just don't see the market shaping up this way. You do that 5 weeks ago, right? And, you know, if he signs it, great. You have a better value contract. Mm-hmm. If he doesn't, you trade him. And then you can, you know, go kick the can. Like, maybe you've gauged the market right. And when the market opens, Tanner Pearson's not going to have a ton of, he's not going to have Toffoli offers available to him. Maybe you're wrong, but, you know, what's the downside of approaching it that way, right? Like, that you have to find another Tanner Pearson, which is another middle six contributor on the open market. And as we've seen from teams like, you know, Montreal, Florida, those are the two examples we just brought up. Like, those players are available, right? Like, if you go look at players like, you know, Sonny Milano in Anaheim, right? Guy who's can scored. Like, this guy's scored when he's got minutes in the NHL. He sort of never had a consistent opportunity. Like, that's one thing the Canucks can sort of offer players, right? Like, you can get more out of JT Miller in Vancouver than the place that he's in, right? Because you have ice time to offer. Like, you have roles and opportunities and two pretty good top line centers. Like, there were rolls of the dice.
And everyone gets a chance with those guys. Believe me. Everyone.
Right. So, you know, I mean, look, that, I think that's an example where it's like creativity meets ruthlessness and creates a sort of a third way that the Canucks didn't explore because they were really dead set on having Pearson in particular because of where their team's at. And look, Jason, I want to talk about one other quick thing too, which is that, you know, inefficient contracts, the way you're talking about them, like, these are a self-perpetuating problem for the Canucks, right?
In what,
like,
way?
Well, what's the biggest problem with the 2 year times $2.5 million plan I just pitched you?
I would be like, I'm not making less than Jake.
Right. Like, you know,
next year is like 3.7 or something like that.
3.7,
like,
yeah. But his cap hit even is 2.55, right? Mm. So you're making $50,000 less than Jake Virtanen. Well, you know, if you're Tanner Pearson, it's like, hey, every time we take the ice, I'm playing top 6 minutes. Like, I am fourth among your forwards in ice time since I joined this team. And this guy was a healthy scratch for the first game of the playoffs. He's often on your fourth line. Like, sometimes he comes up to the second line, and by the third period, he's not on my line anymore. Like, what? How are you paying him more than me? How are you paying Rousseau and Beagle more than me? Like, I can't even sign that contract because it'll make me feel undervalued in my workspace. You know what I mean?
Like, could you theoretically say, yeah, but things have changed, Tanner?
Well, you have to. I mean, that's what you have to say.
Right.
But it doesn't change the fact that, like, you know, and I think this should be relatable for people, you know, for anyone listening who's like on their way to work, but it's like, you know, it just hits you in terms of your day to day. Like, oh, I feel undervalued. Like, that sucks. You know, like, it's honestly, I just think it's a,
now I know, I want to know what Sat makes now. I'll be honest with you. I want to know what everyone makes. Am I being undervalued here? This is ridiculous. Jancer, I teased that you have a plan. It's not going to save the Canucks, but you do have some ideas about how the Canucks should go forward to avoid these situations and to start some sort of internal cap structure.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, because that's what Tampa Bay and Boston have, right? And it helps them so, so much. And I look at this right now, like, when I look at the Canucks and I look at what their biggest issue is, aside from needing to get cheaper and better at the same time in terms of the sort of depth rungs of their roster, it's the fact that coming up right now, right after this season, you're going to have Hughes and Pettersson to negotiate with. The following season, you have Besser. The following season, you have Horvat and Miller. And the following season, you probably have one of Hughes or Pettersson, or maybe Hughes and Pettersson to negotiate. Like, you've got these contracts staggered in such a way that a predictable level of cost certainty for a window, an organic window with which to go for it with this core, is like still needs to be carved out. And there is some risk, in my view, that it might already be fundamentally compromised, right? Like, that's my most negative take about this club at the moment, but it's something that I, you know, think Canucks fans should be worried about. It would keep me up at night if I was Jim Benning or one of Jim Benning's lieutenants. So, you know, one way I think that they can begin to structure things so that they're relatively fair for Pettersson and Hughes, and also create an environment where they can use the rate that Hughes and Pettersson hit to produce more favorable outcomes with Besser, Miller, Horvat, should they decide to re-sign all three. You know, what I'd do is I'd potentially go to them and I'd look at bundling their deals so that they match exactly. Now to make them match exactly, because Hughes doesn't have real restricted free agency rights, right? Like, he's one of those 10.2C guys, pushes my glasses back up on my nose. He's also an extra year away from unrestricted free agency, right? Mm-hmm. So you're buying out like a pre-RFA year from, if you sign Pettersson for 3 years, you're buying, you know, two arbitration, pre-arb seasons, and then one arbitration eligible season. To make the match, you kind of need to go an extra year with Hughes. And I think what's good about that is it allows you to value them the same. So I'd go to them and see if you could get 3x7.5 for Pettersson. That's the a premium on the Barzal deal. Mm-hmm. And 4x7.5 for Hughes. Now, that's a deal that basically has no market comps, right? Ever, right? Like, you're basically signing the Aaron Ekblad contract, but for 4 years, where Ekblad signed for eight, right?
Would that take him to UFA though?
No, because he's 10.2C.
Ah, yes, my favorite.
He burned a season of his ELC, right? But didn't burn or he didn't accrue a year toward unrestricted free agency.
Right. So, gotcha.
The deals wouldn't exactly line up, but they would in terms of the players, like, service clock. Mm. The both players would expire 1 year from ARB, and now you've set a 7.5 sort of limit. When Besser's up, he's going to have a $7.5 million qualifying offer. Like, he's going to be in a really advantageous negotiating position as a result. And so these deals would help you too with Besser. Like, it's like, well, we can't pay you more than Pettersson and Hughes. So, you know, we'll offer you the qualifying offer times three, but that's sort of the best we can do. It'll help you with Horvat too. And make no mistake, like, Horvat expiring after the flat cap, like, abandons us, mm-hmm. right?
And JT Miller.
Right, and JT Miller. But, like, probably in a world where the flat cap is done, owners have had two full seasons of fans in the building, the players have been paying back their pandemic escrow debt for 2 years.
New TV deal.
And the TV deal kicks in and all of a sudden hits the cap with, like, a $7 million sort of accelerant or inflationary impact. Like,
you've got 1 minute left.
Okay, Horvat could do really well, is my point. And so setting this baseline for those top players can have a spillover effect, knock-on effects that sort of cascade down the roster and help you find value and help you sort of restrain the value of other players. I'd really strongly consider bundling those guys, doing it in that way, just because that's the type of internal, like, favorable internal pressure that can allow the Canucks to run downhill in negotiations as opposed to uphill, which I do think had an impact in these Pearson talks.
Dranser, good talk, buddy. So Jim Benning at 10 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
He'll address the COVID situation, obviously, along with a doctor. And then at around 10:20, he's expected to get into the hockey topics. We will have that press conference live on Sportsnet 650. Yeah, it's almost like we're the home of the Canucks or something. I don't know. So it is going to be a very interesting day on Sportsnet 650. And thank you for being a part of it, Thomas Drance. Enjoy the weekend, buddy.
Yeah, you too, man. We'll chat next week. Cheers.
Thanks, buddy. Thomas Drance, 8 o'clock is Murph. We'll talk more Canucks. Maybe we'll talk some golf, too. Murph is a good golfer. I can't wait to go out and play golf with Murph again. Maybe we'll talk a little bit of Masters. Justin Rose was absolutely on fire yesterday. I didn't take him in my pool. I'm kicking myself because Rosie's one of my favorite players, too. I took Lee Westwood instead.
This is in the Riccio pool?
This is in the Dan Riccio pool, yeah. I thought Westy's current form was good, and he really, really struggled yesterday, along with a bunch of other people. The course is playing tough. It's the Alfred and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. We will have some more time, I promise, to get into what we learns and Ask Us Anythings. I've flagged a few Ask Us Anythings in the Dunbar Lumber text line. We'll read a few on the other side. Before Murph, Halford, Brough, Sportsnet, 650. Halford and Brough Show, Sportsnet, 650. Murph is coming up at 8 o'clock. Talk about the Canucks, maybe a little golf if we have time. And then Ask Us Anythings and what we learned. And then stick around and keep listening to Sportsnet 650 because Jim Benning is holding a press conference at 10 a.m. I'm sure the media has some questions for him. Halford and Brough in the Morning is brought to you by Able Auctions. Business assets to sell. Email sales at ableauctions.ca. Justin on Texada with an Ask Us Anything. What's the most awkward part about switching from 1040 to Sportsnet? Honestly, there hasn't been much awkwardness. Dom's a little awkward. Working with a new producer and finding out his weaknesses and then really focusing in on those weaknesses.
I could say the same about you, by the way.
What are my weaknesses?
It's not something I want to divulge on air. Mm-hmm. I like my job. I don't want to lose it.
Well, I can't fire you. I don't think it works like that. No, it's been great, and everyone here has been great. And I know a lot of people were like, oh, I wonder if Halford and Brough are going to have to like be different on Sportsnet 650 because it's the rights holders. And I've always said, we just do our thing. We don't really worry too much about what the Canucks think or say. And we worked at 1040 when the Canucks had the rights. I don't think we were full-time guys then, but we had our show. And we've never heard from the Canucks. We've never heard them complain about what we've said or anything. I think we're fair. That's why. And we want the Canucks to succeed. The whole show is based on the fact that we want the Canucks to win a Stanley Cup while we're alive. That's why there's the sad club, and that's why we get so maybe overreact to certain things because we're passionate Canucks fans, right? That's what we are. And sports is one of those things that I think you should even be able to overreact to because it is the whole thing's ridiculous. You know, it's like the Seinfeld bit of cheering for laundry. We've all just agreed that this stuff is important. Is it really? Not really. But it's part of the fun of life, isn't it? And I love sports because generally I try not to be petty or greedy or envious, but I very much am as a sports fan. I'm envious. That's why I don't want any other Canadian team to win the Stanley Cup before the Canucks, because I don't want to feel that envy of being like, oh, I wish it was the Canucks. I wish the parade was in Vancouver. I know that's not good human being behavior, but it's only sports, so we can do that. Dan Murphy coming up next at 8 o'clock. We'll talk about the Canucks. We'll talk maybe some golf if we have time. Halford, Brough. No Halford, just Brough. It's the Jason Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
Loyalty to any one sports team is pretty hard to justify because the players are always changing, the team can move to another city. You're actually rooting for the clothes when you get right down to it. You know what I mean? You are standing and cheering and yelling for your clothes to beat the clothes from another city. Fans will be so in love with a player, but if he goes to another team, they boo him. This is the same human being in a different shirt. They hate him now. Boo! Different shirt! Boo!